The Fighting Cock Podcast, as featured on SpursLatest.com. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock! It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock!
A camel channel!
Hello and welcome to the Fighting Cock Podcast, episode 6. I'm Flav. I'm here with Spooky, Chicago Dan, Trunk, Engineer Al, and once again Ricky,
King Cock Ricky.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Ricky won the game of killer last week, so was exempt from the prick of the week.
Fluke.
Yes, yeah, because I'm sure he'll run again. But someone did win prick of the week unanimously, even without Ricky in it, and that was Barry Glendenning.
Hey.
Well done, Barry.
Nice one, Baz.
Prick, mate. You're a prick. Anyway. He is a prick.
I'm sure he listens.
Unanimously, everyone agrees he's a prick.
We're certainly starting a war with him, though, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to war with Barry Glendenning. It doesn't necessarily have to be a war of words. It can be a war on the streets if he wants it.
Yeah. He doesn't even have to know about it.
I'll bring my mate Stanley along. Anyway, so I suppose we'd better talk about what we've been up to this week. So, Spook, do you want to start?
Barbecue. Thought I'd get away from Tottenham. Unfortunately, Neil the cabbie was there.
Oh, yeah?
And my uncle, who was a fanatical supporter during the 70s and 80s, doesn't go that much anymore because he's got 3 kids, etc., etc. So it turned into an autopsy, really, of the 5-1, but we'll get to that later on.
Okay.
So good food, but unfortunately, too much Tottenham.
What did you barbecue, Spooky, just out of interest?
Everything, you know what, they just overdid it, mate.
Wasn't steak and vegetables.
You can't overdo a barbecue spot.
No, you could do this one, it was a bit over the top.
You should have invited me, I would have sorted that whole thing up.
A bit of grits.
Anything, mate. I don't turn down food.
What have they have? Grits.
Sausage and biscuits and gravy.
No, it's biscuits and gravy.
No, we went on to the American to the bottom treats. So we're talking about digestives and bisto.
No, it's like they're like you know what I'm saying. They're like scones.
It's like a scone.
A scone.
With
bechamel and sausage on top. Anyway,
it's good. Scone, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Scone and gravy.
It's well good.
A scone and gravy.
It's banging.
All right. So good food. Too much of Tottenham, really. Yeah. We're done without it.
Yeah. That. Well, we'll come on to that. Dan, what do you?
I've done nothing, mate. Unemployed, sat on my sofa.
Surfed
the internet.
I think after the game we got up to something. I mean, me and Dan went to the game along with Engineer Al and Ricky.
So yeah, me and Flav after the game. We went into a Spurs pub around White Hart Lane to watch the Arsenal Man U match.
Yep.
Things got a bit exciting as the match went on. We decided after the match to go celebrate. I go into a pub in Finsbury Park and looking at the sad mugs.
Not just any pub, their main pub, the 12 Pins. So we was coming down the Seven Sisters Road and we thought, I fancy a pint, I'm not quite ready to go home yet, and sort of let the 5-1 defeat ruminate in my head. So we thought, let's go for a quick pint. Couldn't find any pubs around. Looked over and the 12 Pin, which is the main Gooner pub in Finsbury Park, and we thought, let's have a couple of pints in there and just look at their faces for a while. And we did. We sat there, we had about 4 pints, and looked at their miserable little scrope faces.
Luckily, Flav realised before we walked in the pub that his Tottenham badge...
Yeah, I had my Spurs pin on my collar.
Pin on his collar. So I had to rip it off real quick.
I didn't want to take it off. I was going to go in there and have it.
I didn't see one person in there that looked like they could do anything.
Yeah, but you were physically taking it off me.
You asked me to. I would have left it out. I would have put it on myself if you wanted me to.
I did not. I didn't. That didn't happen. Right, Ricky, what have you been doing, mate?
Fuck all, mate. I went to a wedding on Friday, went to the Tottenham game, which was brilliant, and then got pissed after. That was it. Absolutely nothing.
And you was driving, your mate drove you down Milton Keynes?
Yeah, I did want to give him a shout-out. Brennan, the drive down and the drive back from Milton Keynes. The car park incident, we were sitting there for about an hour and a half.
Obviously, it's after the game.
After the game, we're just sitting there listening to the Arsenal game, which was fun. But sitting in the car park after a fucking 5-1 smashing is not the best thing. But many thanks for the lift, mate. Cheers.
Jack, what you been doing, mate?
Well, I hazard to talk about myself after a certain poster apparently said that I was a bit full of myself, or that we're a bit full of ourselves talking
that
about
nobody
ourselves.
Cares. Nobody cares about
that's
us.
That's true. So I'll talk about the Twitter mission. That
who
we,
was that poster? Sorry.
Vancouver Spur, was
Vancouver.
It?
I think he was. I don't think he'll be listening anyway. He obviously hates what we do. So.
Nah. I don't like you, Vancouver Spur.
I don't like Canada. No,
I don't like you.
I was going to say I don't like Canada. But
no,
I like
no,
Canada.
I love Canada.
Canada's a kind, gentle place. They don't like
their
doors in
Canada.
It's a good place.
Do they?
Yeah, they like beat up seals with clubs, don't they? And, like,
I thought, was that in Canada?
Yeah. They do seal clubbing in Canada.
Do they?
And they, I think they still whale as well.
What the fuck?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not having that.
Do you know what I mean?
Every Canadian that listens to this show, turn off now. I don't like little seals getting clubbed. Unless it was that singer from the 80s.
He looks like he's already been clubbed.
It's a bit distasteful, okay?
Yeah. Shut up, mate.
Yeah,
okay. So that's it, basically. You've been.
Well, no, well, the Twitter mission, I wasn't even talking about Canada. I'm like, where did Canada come from?
So, what's your Twitter mission?
So we had a mission last week that we were trying to. I've basically stolen Ricky's idea, but I'm going to go with it. That we're going to get a retweet about the podcast from a member of the Tottenham team. We got a Sky Sports presenter. I got into an argument with Curtis Davis. Ricky got into an argument with Gillum Balagi, whatever he's
Balagan.
Called. And but thank you to Joe Dom Vince, who got the Fighting Cock a retweet from... none other than Jake Livermore, Tottenham superstar.
Come on, Jakey, son.
Come on, Jake.
Now, let me...
Future.
And for the guy that got the tweet as well, a nice one as well.
Yeah, well done, Joe.
Well done, Joe.
Nice one, Joe. You should probably be on here instead of Dan.
Joe, well done, mate, but I'm taking a bit of issue with this. I saw a tweet from Danny Rose suggesting to all his followers that you start following Jake Livermore. So I hopped on Jake Livermore's... Twitter page, saw you only had 4,000 followers. I thought, you know, I'm going to be cheeky. I'm going to make my first attempt to getting a Spurs player to retweet. I'm going to get in there with Jake Livermore and I'm going to get it. So I tweet.
That sounds a bit sender or something.
I tweet to Livermore, basically what Ricky's been tweeting to everybody on the team for the last 4 weeks. You know, can we get a retweet for the best Tottenham podcast out there, whatever. I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to be really cheeky. I'm going to get this. And then 2 hours later, old Joe tweets exactly the same thing. And Livermore retweets his and not mine. So, Jake Livermore, you're dead to me.
But, thank you, Jake Livermore. You're not listening to this. But thank you for Joe Dom Vince.
Yeah. Well done, mate.
Yeah,
even though you stole my tweet.
And he has been very active on Twitter, and he's been a big supporter of ours, retweeting everything like that we post.
Top, well done. Top fella. And Jake, when we like release you to a League One team in a couple of seasons, thanks still. Yeah.
should we talk a little bit about Jake now, like just for a couple of minutes? Because he came on against City, and we'll move on to them that debacle in a bit, but. He came on and he showed a bit of vigour. We're down to 10 then, more or less, for most of the time that he was on the pitch.
Should have started, in my opinion.
Yeah,
he deserved to start over Modric. He did.
Of course he did.
Well, I think... are we going into this City?
Yeah, let's do it.
With the middle, I mean, like, Nico and Modric in the middle, they're both very similar players. And I think with the power that City have got in the middle, I think we needed a bit of kind of youth, someone to run around, someone to... I don't know, put some tackles in. And like Nico, and like, although Modric does kind of put his tackles in, Nico isn't really like that. And I think we should have started kind of... we normally do have a defensive player there, but, I mean, with our injuries at the moment, we haven't really got anyone. But Livermore would have done great in there. And he started against Man United, and he's coming on heaps. But I think he should have started.
I think he should have started because he offers a little bit more effort and... can get his foot in better than Nico can in midfield, and arguably
he'd be more focused as well than a certain other player.
Certainly, definitely, yeah, that would be the case. But I loathe to say it, I don't think Jake Livermore is going to step up, and I don't think he'll be a Tottenham regular in the next year or so.
Well, he's been offered to West Ham. He's rejected it. He might still go ahead.
Oh, don't blame that. Imagine going down to that scum hole, playing football with all them mugs watching you play.
But if you're being offered in the first place, it suggests that you're not really in the...
What the twitchy eye or the good eye?
The fact is that Modric didn't look interested. I mean, you know, I've it's taken me a while to turn on Modric. I tend to be very positive and optimistic, but I think I've finally turned completely. I mean, he couldn't have looked any less interested in that match.
I thought he was poor.
And although I didn't join in the booing, to hear the boos turn to cheers when Livermore comes on straight away and starts putting his foot in was great.
That shows you a little bit about what Tottenham actually think. I mean, it's clear that Modric is 5-6 times the player that Livermore ever will be. Modric is without doubt world class. But Tottenham,
what a jackass.
But the
jackass.
That mean, what does that mean in English? we should say that we've made.
And that's the translation. You asked for the translation.
We're making an effort to stop saying the C word on the fighting cock because there's a few cunts complaining about it. But the that's wrong. Isn't it? That was all wrong. Sorry. So what I was saying is that the Modric is going to be, you know, he's always going to be 5 or 6 times the player that Livermore could ever hope to be, possibly. And the fact is that the Spurs faithful recognised it was someone coming on and willing to play for the shirt, and someone going off who couldn't give a fuck about the cockerel at all. Yeah, so, Jack.
I think it's that similar thing we sort of had with Jamie O'Hara when he kind of got that little stint in with Ramos, and Redknapp gave him a little bit of time, but not really much. People were a lot more warm to Jamie O'Hara because, although he wasn't the greatest, he was still, you know, to give the lad credit, he's still a decent enough footballer. He's a Premiership standard footballer, but he wasn't as good as what we had there at the time. But it was just the fact that you could tell he genuinely gave a shit about what was going on. He chased every ball. He tried to get stuck in. He loved it. He was celebrating with the fans every time there was a goal. And I think there's something to be said for that, that if we are now getting to a place where we maybe feel that we might not be chasing the top four anymore, and that we have to start to be more realistic perhaps and look to consolidate 5th or 6th place, there could be something said for having a homegrown player come into the team, or a few homegrown players come into the team, because we've for many years not had really anyone come in and make their mark. And yeah, okay, if we're not going to push the top four, fine, but at least then we're going to have more affinity with our team, as opposed to just someone that can come in and do the same job and get us in the same place that's from somewhere else.
I think the more successful you become, the more likely you are to have players that care less about your club. It's going to happen. So, I mean, Jamie O'Hara is going to be a good player for a middle-level team. He's going to care about your club and you're going to have an affinity with him. But you're never really going to... he's never going to get into a team that's finishing the top four on a regular basis. And that's going to happen with most players that come through Spurs ranks and then Man United ranks or Arsenal ranks. It's going to happen.
I know, but what I'm saying is, the point I'm making is if we now are becoming a sort of team that is, say, 5th, 6th, 7th place team, as opposed to someone that's now getting into the top four, because we don't have that ridiculous money to spend on wages and on transfer fees, I'm confident that maybe a player like O'Hara could maintain us at that sort of level, and at least it's a homegrown talent. Even though didn't O'Hara come from Arsenal, so I'm sort of making a redundant point.
Yeah, but they've always said that he was a Yiddo at heart, didn't they? That he was a Tottenham fan.
But Teddy Sheringham said that, and then said he was West Ham, and Robbie Keane said that. And, yeah, I mean, it's, and Edgar Davids said it as well, didn't they?
Didn't Sol Campbell say it as well?
Oh, don't. Why did you say that name?
Yeah, I know. We're throwing all shit cunts in there.
Ricky, it's too early for Prick of the Week.
Mate, you've already got it wrapped up just with that comment.
That's even worse than the C word, mate. Is a C word of sorts, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
right. Just wanted to say off the back of everything, because I'm almost conflicted. Did Modric really play that poorly? Because I thought it was all right, but I think the longer the game went on, he did disappear, whether that was because he was exhausted, or whether that was simply because he was playing in midfield with a player similar to him, with no Sandro or a defensive midfielder to protect. So he became redundant, really. He couldn't recycle the ball or possession the way we know he can, because what he had around him was two wingers who basically weren't doing that much, were standing still, weren't running into space. I think he was a little boy lost in the end, and he probably did get frustrated. If he genuinely didn't want to start the game, he should have started. If I'm the manager of Tottenham and a player turns up and says, I don't want to play 2 hours before,
rape him.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far.
I'd
rape a condom on me, but...
Nah, without a condom, you've got to lay your point down.
I was paying particular attention to Modric the whole match, and he just didn't look. He had no energy. He wasn't interested in putting out any more effort than need be. He looked like a guy who didn't care. Now, maybe a few times he got on the ball and did something decent with it, but I watched him for the 65 odd minutes that he played, and I thought he was embarrassing.
But what I will say is I went to Croatia and I noticed that they eat a lot of bread. Like, there's lots of things that are all bready. Like, they have had lots of pizza, lots of bread, and these like weird bread rolls and stuff. And I find that when I eat bread, I get very lethargic. So you might have just had like a Croatian Sunday lunch.
And we're misreading everything.
Maybe, exactly. I think it's just.
We're talking about a wheat product.
Wheat intolerance. So that's it. He came in and told Redknapp that he had a tummy ache.
That's it. Exactly. So Luca, you know.
See what is Redknapp doing in? We've just been spanked 5-1 at home. Playing the wrong team for the occasion. I know there's this thing about the Tottenham way, and in my preview on DearMrLevy.com, I actually said we should go for it. The reality is we didn't actually have the players to be able to do that because we were going to get overrun in midfield. But he played Crouch up front on, you know, with Van der Vaart behind him. No DMs, no Livermore, who should have started. So we're set up to get smashed.
Yeah.
Because we played like the home team, they countered. And they're just full of confidence, City, at the minute. You have to give them that. And they just ruined us at the back.
I'll tell you what I would have done in Redknapp's twitchy shoes, right? I would have played two centre-backs. It could have been Dawson and Bessong. I wouldn't have played Crenshaw and Modric in centre midfield. I'd have played Cabal as a deep-lying central midfielder because he can play there. And certainly going to do more defensively than Crenshaw would ever help.
It'd tie you up at least.
And it would make it tighter. They just pass the ball around for fun. Yeah. They sort of tear us apart with their admittedly amazing squad and amazing first team. But the fact is that they're all professional footballers. And if we play a defensive midfielder or a player at least can play there and mop up, then we're going to be more competitive, Jack.
I've got to say what was particularly painful about it is that I've been one of the people that has, for the last season, watching him in the Charity Shield where I didn't think he was that good, just been laying into Edin Dzeko, just saying, oh, thank fuck we didn't sign him.
We need to explain that.
Right. Engineer Al has got a stomach problem and he went for a poo.
But he fell
and
over.
And he's just fallen off his chair.
And he tried to climb over and fall off his chair, so there you go.
That's probably not anything interesting. Remember what was I on about?
Dzeko, digging Dzeko out.
Oh yeah, basically I was laying into him and this and that, and I was actually talking with a Gooner friend of mine who we were both talking and having a good laugh at his expense. And safe to say, Sunday evening I sent him a text saying, yeah, that Dzeko's bollocks, isn't it? He would have, I think, in any other situation, laughed at me a lot. But they lost 8-2, so there you go.
Well, we're moving on to that a bit later. But
well, I want to comment on the centre backs specifically. I thought against Manchester United a week ago that our two centre backs, Dawson and Cabal, looked absolute shit. Guys were sneaking in behind them, getting in between the two of them, losing players. I thought they were at fault for most of the goals. We got a comment. Feedback on how we hadn't commented on how good Cabal was against Manchester United. And with all due respect, you go back and watch those goals against Manchester United. Cabal was not good, and he wasn't good again in this match. Dawson wasn't good, Cabal wasn't good. I like them both, but they're at fault for almost every goal that's been conceded this season.
Dawson got absolutely raped for that Aguero goal. Aguero just turned
him
inside
at the moment
out.
They're not good enough, the two of them. Maybe they can be. Yeah. Maybe they will be. They're not right now.
Cabal is. I mean, do you know what? I think even watching from that game, when you look back to it, I would have even if he didn't really want to risk Livermore in that game, I'd have even been tempted to stick Cabal in. Like as a defensive midfielder. I mean, Bassong's fit, isn't he? We could have played Bessong.
He just spent five minutes explaining that.
Are you listening to what
you're saying? You're stolen my point. You've been sitting there not listening.
Am I? That was Ricky, not me.
Hang on. What was you thinking about at that point? When I was talking, what were you thinking about? What's this? Is that your snack of choice?
It is my snack of choice. But I tell you what, I used to like the barbecue beef flavour What's this, but they discontinued, so I have to make do with cheese.
I like Cheese ain't a snack.
Life
is like cheesy wants it. It's not cheese is a snack. Cheese is a very fatty thing.
Trunk, life's all about sacrifices, and sometimes you can't get what you want, no?
That's true.
Anyway,
that's quite deep, Dan. Actually. That was existentialism, isn't it? It's going a bit Joe Bart.
Let's bring us back on point, Spook, please.
Again, going back to the Tottenham way, and we're at home, we should be attacking them, blah, blah, blah. We didn't set out to contain them. I think Redknapp scapegoating Luka, even though Luka probably deserves a bit of scapegoating generally for his behaviour, doesn't really fix anything. There's a fundamental problem at the minute. The team, even if you're picking 11 players that aren't quite a slightly mismatched, there should still be a bit of effort in there. And yeah, it looked like our heads dropped practically from the moment we conceded.
But then again,
if we were playing Liverpool at home, I reckon we would have lost 3-1. If we were playing Chelsea at home, we could have lost 2-1. Probably would have been an Arsenal with that team, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point being is, if we had Adebayo up front, and these are loads of ifs and buts, we missed chances to start off with. We might have lost 4-2 if we were playing Adebayo. We've still got problems there.
All right. But I should say, look,
it's not as bad as it seems.
Let's get a bit of positivity going, because we've played two of probably the best two teams in England.
In Europe.
Yeah.
In Europe, even. You know, Man United at home, I mean, you saw what happened to Arsenal, and Arsenal have, you know, forever proven that they're a top four team. They got smashed. We didn't lose as badly up there. We played Man City. They, to be fair, outclassed us completely.
Yeah.
But it's two games we're severely under strength in the centre of midfield, which is possibly the most important area of the pitch anyway. It isn't that bad. We've got players coming in. We've got rid of two really difficult fixtures. Our running at the end of the season is very, very forgiving for us. So there's plenty of... I mean, it's two fucking games in. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've got to be a bit more positive about this. It's not over. It's you know, we can still finish in the top four. And with Adebayo, if he bangs in a few goals, and if we get Scott Parker or Diarra, if that happens, then we're going to be all right. It's going to be okay. So we need a bit more sort of positivity.
In fairness, I know I've slagged off a few players already, but let me move to the two guys that I thought were quite good again against Manchester City, and I thought they were good against Manchester United, and that was Brad Friedel. And everyone's new
propaganda.
Favorite.
Come on,
he's tired. He left 5 goals in at home.
Were those
to be dropped, mate?
I would have saved the fifth goal.
You think
the
so?
Zeka.
Yeah. But I was saying Friedel and everyone's favourite Benoit Assou-Ekodo. I thought he had another nice game.
He did have a good game. He looked fine. I thought. Anyone got anything else to say about? Oh, Matt, sorry, Ricky. Yeah, what you got to say? You haven't said anything. Come on.
Yeah, I know. I've forgotten what I was going to say. No, I think it was just about the going back to positives. We have just played both Manchester teams, champions Man United. Man City have just spunked shitloads of money on a squad that was already fucking brilliant anyway. But like people were saying, I went into work today and someone said that, you know, top four, you can at least say it's out of your league now. And I thought, well, to tell you the truth, it's going to be Man U, Man City, Chelsea, and Chelsea aren't even looking that great, to be honest, personally. No,
they've worked.
You've got your free league there, and then the fourth is Liverpool, Arsenal, Tottenham. And with Liverpool spending a lot of money on what I feel is average players,
right,
Arsenal are really deteriorating. Do you know what? It's two games gone, and I really don't think
did
that
we
that's
not?
It. We're out of the race. It's
that's
like two games gone.
Did we not in 2010 win our first four games and we were top? And everyone was banging on about, oh, this could be the season Spurs finish top four. Then we got beaten by Chelsea. I think we got beaten by Man United. And then everyone was basically saying, oh, same old Tottenham.
Yeah.
And then we do you know what I mean? And then towards the end of the season, we showed some grit.
Yeah.
And we got there in the end. So, yeah,
look,
exactly.
But
two
you
games
can lose,
in.
You lose games back to back. It can happen. We weren't helped by the team selection by Redknapp. But it happens.
I think the issue is probably what we'll probably talk about later on is that people comparing the last 45 games under Redknapp, he's only won one game more than
right,
Ramos.
Let's move that on. Let's move on
really?
To that.
But I don't think it's just, yeah. I mean, on paper you think right, he's got to be sacked. But
that's
again,
we'll get to that.
You know,
shit
it's knee-jerk.
No, I think the stat was that Redknapp has, over the same amount of games at this point, Redknapp has one more win, two more draws, and two fewer losses than Ramos.
So basically, over 54 games, which is pretty mean, so it's a decent kind of mean average to judge a manager by, Redknapp is marginally better than Ramos, and Matt Ramos's reign was pretty much regarded, apart from the 5-1 win at Arsenal and beating Chelsea, was...
Got a cup.
We got a cup, but it was regarded as a pretty much of a dismal, affair, but... The fact is, Redknapp's only marginally better than Ramos, and that's kind of what I want to move on to now. Jack, what are you got to say?
Well, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead of myself. I was just going to make a point about Redknapp.
Go on, go ahead, mate.
Sort of tied in with the City thing, and it, it adds this bridge. What I didn't like in particular is, and we've all seen him show his true colours so many times before, but I don't know if you heard his post-match interview after the City game. One of his comments that particularly irked me was that he said, I've never had a defeat like that in a home game before. Yeah. And it's to me, that's...
We can't share
it's
that.
The Redknapp brand.
I've had
the Redknapp brand.
And it's...
Well, he does consistently refer to Spurs as some entity
them.
Outside
yeah.
of
yeah.
Them. Outside
them.
Of himself.
Them.
He has no control.
And I mean, I don't like to... I'm not jumping on this bandwagon. I appreciate what Harry's done for us and... Whatever, but at the same time, it is especially the way he's conducted himself around this kind of the transfer dealings, this and that. It's irked me. It's irked me the fact that he has played completely to the press the fact that the transfer dealings and the lack thereof has been nothing to do with it. Every time he's been asked about it, the chairman's trying to sort.
All right,
let's
talk a little bit about Redknapp's transfer dealings, okay? Whether or not he's involved or not. Arguably, since Redknapp took over, then we've had two successes. I would say two very good successes. Sandro, which he had nothing to do with, which we were tracking for ages. It was actually Ian Bloomfield, our chief scout, who saw Sandro and got him signed. I think, that's according to the One in the Hole blog. And Van der Vaart, which we all know on record, Redknapp had nothing to do with. So our two main decent signings. Let's have a little think about Redknapp signing, shall we? Bringing Defoe back, bringing Robbie Keane back, signing Peter Crouch. Do you know what I mean? What he's the geezer.
I think it's quite obvious what's going on though. I think Levy's backing him.
Nico as well.
I think Levy's basically saying, "You're the manager. It's your squad. It's your responsibility to basically get the team to a position that we need to be in." Levy's probably more ambitious. Because it's the classic Suarez thing. I mean, it's obviously everyone keeps banging on about how... Redknapp said it himself. I think there is a quote from Redknapp and he says he's not the type of forward we needed because he's similar to Van der Vaart in that he's a more forward Van der Vaart. So playing him and Van der Vaart, they'd both be coming deep and moving into the same positions, blah, 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 blah.
I think it was even more embarrassing than that, Spiff. I think he actually compared him to Robbie Keane, didn't he, as opposed to Van der Vaart, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, if you said that, then
I think it was Robbie Keane, not even Van der Vaart, which...
I
might be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong, please, prick of the week.
Again, this is guesswork, because none of us know. Nobody knows, even the alleged ITKs. Levy probably does go to Harry and go, look, these are the targets that you want. These are the ones that we can bid for. But all these players are also available. And I think Harry Redknapp probably does have the last say in... Only when it comes to the last minute, the deadline, and we're desperate, that Levy probably kicks in some magic and signs someone out of nowhere.
Well, and that would be Levy again, and Redknapp will no doubt, do his best to sort of
take credit for it.
Rick,
no, it's just what I want to know is why is it that Harry Redknapp is the only Premier League manager? When I get home from work, put on Sky Sports News with the transfers. Harry Redknapp, we're going to be live with Harry Redknapp at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
He's going to be talking about, we're going to be doing it, oh, I don't know about this. And
just wobbling all over the screen.
Why the fuck is he on there?
I don't know.
Every single day trying to
transfers. I do know why. Because he's got an agenda. He's got a reason to be in the public eye all the time. Partly that's because the press love him, because he gives them soundbite after soundbite.
Some of the press love him. There's a part of the press that actually think that he's bulletproof.
Yeah.
I've heard that. Again, everyone bangs on about that as well, in that he can do, we've been spanked 5-1, but
Wenger's getting his ass ripped out of him.
Yeah.
And not a single word said about Redknapp.
Well, he's been doing that to other people for years.
The thing is, though...
be careful.
Sorry.
Why has Levy not said to Redknapp, just shut up? just shut your fucking mouth.
Yeah,
just shut your mouth. Just be quiet and just leave everything alone. And when something happens, we'll do a press conference. You can wave a T-shirt saying, you know, Redknapp and bloody Lozana Diarra.
You just see it, don't you, when he's there in his Land Rover out the front of the Spurs Lodge with his big face that looks like an uncooked turkey just wobbling about. And
a melted Wellington boot.
Yeah, doesn't it?
Yeah, right, so I put it out of a spank.
Like a sack of pool balls.
Yeah. Well, it's Tuesday today, day before deadline transfer day, and he was he pulled out the lodge, stopped and had a conversation with Sky Sports.
Of course he did, because his ultimate agenda is to go to become an England manager. And we know
I think he's talking himself out of that at the minute.
Oh, fuck, he couldn't get it anyway.
Could be in jail,
he couldn't
then,
fucking get it anyway. Quickly, we need to wrap this up, lads. But I think ultimately, the Redknapp, for me, his tenure over Spurs has been defined by the recent handling of the Modric situation, where he's constantly contradicting what the club is putting out officially. Levy has said, Modric is not for sale, he's not leaving. And what do we hear from that cunt? Sorry, not cunt. What do we hear from him is that the boy's had his head turned, and you can kind of understand. And
you can understand that he's getting like
I can't understand
wages and all that. Lot.
No, I don't understand, Redknapp. Please explain it to me. Instead of just giving us these sound bites that the papers love, explain to me why we should understand that Modric, it's okay for him to have his head signed when he signed a 6-year contract. Explain to me, Redknapp, why that's okay. And if you can do that to satisfy me, then I'll say fair enough. Fair enough, Harry, that's fine. But don't give me all that bullshit sound bites that the papers
the,
love.
The problem is his personality. If this was Martin Yeo having these
we wouldn't be
problems,
having this discussion.
We'd give him an effort.
Of course
chance,
we would.
Basically.
Because he had the same problem with Berbatov. The exact same problem.
Even though tactically Redknapp and Martin Yeo were probably on the level, because Martin Yeo choked a few times and never... I know there's this thing about if he'd been given the chance, he might have overcome his deficiencies, but...
Martin Yeo isn't as good of a football manager as Redknapp. I'll admit that, but his personality is such that he was always.
He was one of us, wasn't he? Really.
Even if he wasn't, he made it feel like he was.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to, run up and give him a big cuddle. I wanted to do that. I loved him. I loved it. That song, right?
This he's is, the this, dad we never had, really.
Yeah. Yeah. He's tantamount. The reason why I love him so much, and the Spurs fans, an example of why we loved him so much, is that song, which is whoever manager we have, it's Martin Yole's Blue and White Army, Juan de Ramos' Blue and White Army. When do you ever hear anyone say Harry Redknapp's Blue and White Army? And that means that Harry Redknapp is doing something wrong.
Plus, let's not forget Yole scoring up to Arsene Wenger on the touchline.
He should have nutted his head through his skull.
And he would have done.
He should have done. All right, Rick, where are you finishing up, mate?
Just finishing up, I just want to say that Flav is actually scaring me of how animated he's becoming with his Harry Redknapp. And while he's been saying this, he's actually been punching himself in the dick. He's so angry, he doesn't know where to direct it. But we'll finish up on that.
Cabbies. Hello once again, I'm Neil the Cab Driver, and welcome for the second edition of View from the Cab. Today I'd like to talk about Facebook, Twitter, all the rest of it. Obviously, as you are well aware, I'm a huge Spurs fan, and unfortunately I watched the game against Man United, 3-0 loss. I watched the game against Man City, the 5-1 loss. In actual fact, I don't think we played particularly that bad. I just think that we was beaten by two better sides. I really believe that one of those Manchester clubs are going to win the league. The other one's going to come second. But what really bothers me is the fact that on Sunday, Spurs lost 5-1 to Man City at home. Arsenal lost 8-2 to Manchester United, which some people might have a grin on their face now while I'm saying that, going, yeah, they were rubbish, blah, 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 blah. But what annoys me is that after the game, I go onto Twitter, I go onto Facebook, I go on all these forums and all the rest of it, and you've got Spurs fans that are gloating in Arsenal losing 8-2. Now, let's be quite honest about things, Spurs fans, please. Do we really care about Arsenal as much as we do about Spurs losing 5-1? I couldn't give a monkey's about Arsenal's score. I really couldn't. I couldn't care less, because I personally think that Spurs are better than Arsenal. They've got a better squad than Arsenal. and all that kind of thing. But it really irritates me when you get these Spurs fans who should be concerned about Spurs losing 5-1. The fact that for two of the goals that Man United scored, there was a 10-yard gap between our two central defenders. Our midfield was powder puff against Manchester City. You cannot play Crenshaw and Modric in the middle together. You still need a strong holding midfield player to play in there. But you've got people on Facebook, people on Twitter that are obvious Spurs fans that are taking glory out of the fact that Arsenal lost 8-2. Spurs fans don't care about Arsenal. Who cares about Arsenal? They're a non-entity South London club that no one gives a monkeys about if you're wearing the white and blue of Spurs. Whereas Spurs, for me, shouldn't be losing 5-1 at home. But I have to say, it's not all doom and gloom, because while watching the Man City game, I realised that the next time that Spurs play, it will not even be close to the same team. Adebayor, he'll be there. As we all know, he's signed on loan. Looks like Parker might be coming. Not been signed yet as of today, which is a Monday. Diarra, a possibility. So we're looking at a completely different team. So Spurs fans, keep the faith. We lost 5-1 at home. Don't think that's going to happen again. Don't think that'll happen again away from home either. So let's just not be too doom and gloom about it. Let's try and stay positive and keep cheering them on. Come on, the Spurs. And that's the view from the cab. Thank you for listening.
A cabbie's perspective.
Welcome back to the Fighting Cock podcast. Thank you very much for sticking with us this long. You've just heard Neil the cabbie, view from a cab. Thank you very much, Neil, once again.
Good work, mate.
Go on, Neil.
Yeah, glorious stuff, even if I don't agree with what you're saying. But that's what we're going to go into a little bit, because, you know, if Arsenal lose, given the amount of stick I've got over the years of being a Spurs fan, living around Arsenal fans, the amount of stick I've got, I'm going to celebrate Arsenal getting spanked 8-2. That's going to happen. But we're going to go into a feedback a bit, which sort of comes into this sort of discussion. So, Jack, what you got?
I have a gentleman here called Matt. His Twitter is at mnellis. And he says...
At mnellis.
M-N-E-L-L-I-S. There you go. With the accent before it. Yeah, follow him because he's sent. He says, "Ahoy! Greeting, Team Cock. Hope all is well. I'm summarise my feelings in one sentence, though. Not good enough, but we're only two games in and have played arguably the best two teams in the country. Early days, no need to knee-jerk. When I was growing up, throughout all the mid-table doldrums, I always longed for the day that we finished above the arse, especially after the invincible season, when all of a sudden there seemed to be a lot more about Arsenal fans about." So I'm reading this word for word, I'm not just taking the piss. "So considering we've had the worst pre-season, would you be happy finish mid-table if Arsenal finish below us?"
Genius.
We shouldn't laugh at it. Someone who's emailed in. We shouldn't be laughing.
I liked it.
Control yourself.
Answer the question.
So basically, is it okay to sort of celebrate Arsenal? I mean, to me, I enjoy Arsenal losing more than I do, and actually not more. I enjoy Arsenal losing pretty much as I do Spurs winning. I love it when they lose. And this Sunday, we got smashed 5-1 by Man City, as we've talked about. But when Arsenal went up to Man United and got beat 8-2, that's an amazing score to get done by. Like, they got smashed. And I felt so much better after that game.
To be fair, though, like, we got smashed as well up there. I mean, 3-0 is still pretty bad, isn't it?
It ain't bad as 8-2,
though. It's not as bad as 8-2.
More.
But I understand this point that people are making, that, yeah, Arsenal have done badly, but that shouldn't matter. It's the fact that we still got smashed up there.
It does matter.
And we still got smashed at home. You know, it's...
I love every goal they concede. Love it. Everyone gives me a semi, and if they score two, a full erection.
I don't think I've ever been to a Spurs game or watched a Spurs game where we've been beaten by 8. I can't remember. Well, I can't think.
I think part of the humiliation for Arsenal supporters at the minute is, I know they're banging on about they had like 6-7 players that would have played out injured or unavailable. Some of the players they did have
playing is something to point out to the Arsenal supporters who don't seem to mention it. They're actually the second choice, so they haven't exactly got squad depth. And for any team with supporters that bang on about them being this elite top four Champions League club, to get smashed 8-2 is pretty unacceptable. Because we know who we are. We know we're at a certain level. 5-1, you know, we're taking it on the chin, I think. I think with them, they claim to be this almighty club, almighty team, untouchable. 8-2, there's no way.
Jack, what you got, mate?
It's just what you say. It's nonsense. Like they said it after we beat them 5-1. 5-1 in the Carling Cup semi. And
what's the score?
5-1.
Excellent.
Against who?
Arsenal.
Oh, it's 5-1, mate, not 5-1. 5-1.
5-1. Should we still be going on about this after a few years?
Of course, you should be.
Yeah. What was the score?
5-1.
5-1. 5-1. No,
I've got the DVD here if you want to watch it.
Mine's all ruined because of the spunk all over it. Dan, what you got, mate?
Well, I'm... Cheers. Yeah, thanks. Just you put up the trunk filter now, haven't you? That's all right. And I was just going to say, it's basically what Spook's saying there, that they're always making this excuse, oh, it was our reserves, oh, it wasn't our first team players. But what, so you, what, every single Premiership team now is only going to have 11 players? Yeah, that's more damning to them. And they don't realise this a lot of the time, I guess, that if they don't realise, it's more damning for them to say, oh, our first 11 wasn't out there, so that's why we got smashed 8-2. You know, it's the fact that you even look at our second string and there's a lot of players you'd still be confident in to put out there. And if they're that if they honestly think their second string is going to see them lose 8-2, then what are they arguing about?
Chicago, Dan.
So the question is it all right to revel in the glory of a very poor Arsenal loss? And for me, I think it certainly is. And if you'll stick with me for a 10-second American anecdote... I grew up with a grandfather who's a massive Chicago White Sox fan. That's my team, as you all know. And he would refer to the perfect day as the day when the White Sox would win and the Chicago Cubs would lose.
Yes,
And I feel quite comfortable, as I said, reveling in a bad Arsenal loss, just as I would a bad Chicago Cubs loss.
I was just going to say, it's like living next door to a neighbour who you hate, who's a bit of a wanker, a bit of a tit. You look out your window and you see him walk across the road and trip over and fall flat on his face.
Or gets hit by a bus.
Yeah,
because that's what an 8-2 dropping is. That's a bus crash.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say falling over, you'd laugh at him. I might laugh at him and then call the ambulance if it was a bus.
But... I wouldn't. Honestly, if I saw an Arsenal player with his leg broken on the floor, I'd piss on him and then walk on.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Well, could you imagine if like Nasri had his leg was up there and it like broken and his ankle was pointing in the wrong direction, you wouldn't piss on him.
You've thought about that a bit too much, right? It's a bit scary.
I've wanked over that.
I think some of the although a lot of the Goonies were saying, oh, we have
got a sudden self-loathing then, which is overwhelming.
Some of the Goonies were saying, oh, we haven't got our first team and all that, but then sitting in the pub with them afterwards, it was kind of like, yeah, but we scored two. It's like, okay, yeah, how many teams got up to Old Trafford and scored two? We've scored two, well, but you've also conceded eight.
This is a funny thing I was saying, Rick, like one of my Goonamates one of my Goonamates tried to make the point that because they lost 8-2 and we lost 5-1, proportionately proportionately their scoreline was better because, yeah, I don't know, two and he goes into eight four times or something, didn't they?
Yeah, some weird mathematical equation. I think basically we've answered the question here is that all of us have transcended into a state of taking the piss out of Arsenal because they've conceded eight goals.
Yeah.
The fundamentally is that 80% of Spurs fans are going to enjoy Arsenal getting spanked like that.
Well, look,
and that's with all due respect to Neil the cabbie, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I understand his point. I just don't agree with it, that's all.
Look, every time Tottenham lose, you would get a whole bunch of text messages, phone calls. They'd be all over the place. I remember 2-0 down, half-time, at the Emirates. There was a guy on Twitter that was stalking me, and I remember his tweet at half-time. Oh, where's your Gareth? Bale, Bale, Bale. Couldn't find him after the game.
I know.
3-2 up.
He's gone.
We won the game. Well, you can't find Twitter, people on Twitter.
Let's talk a little bit about Jack Wilshere.
Hey, that was an interesting one, wasn't it? Jack Wilshere came out with, I think, after Dzeko had scored his, I don't know, he scored a goal or something. It doesn't matter, but he scored something. Shit goal. And Wilshere came out and said, I think it's like, Dzeko's playing FIFA on the pitch at White Hart Lane. Someone better stop him. Something like that.
Yeah.
And obviously that got a lot
He's
of vitriol.
He's such a massive prick.
Got a lot of vitriol. And but funnily enough, a few hours later, he didn't tweet anything after then. I don't know. I can't imagine why.
I think Fabregas done the same thing as well. He tweeted something about the game as well at Tottenham Who? City. Fabregas.
I think that both of them should cancel their Twitter accounts. They should that should be out of respect for the humiliation that they've served themselves.
I agree.
They should cancel it off. All right, let's move on. Basically, Arsenal are cunts. We're going to enjoy every single goal that they concede. Oh, not cunts again. Sorry. We're going to enjoy every.
Fuck you. We didn't have a swear box today.
But to be fair, we've sworn a lot less this week.
Oh, I don't care. Swear if you want, man.
I will. Alright.
Cheers, Ricky.
Come on in, Rick. What you got, mate?
Yeah, I've got to read out again. This is the bit I don't like, my reading.
It's our favourite bit.
This is my favourite bit. I love this bit. Go on, Rick.
This is Anurag Joshi from India. You can call me Joe if it's too hard to say my name every time. Joe with Joshi, Anurag is the most difficult part of that, but we'll leave that. I live in India and there are virtually no Spurs fans here. I mean, you'd think a country with, what was that one again? Don't know the number.
1.5 billion.
1.5 billion, we'll round that one up. People would have a respectable amount of Spurs fans, but sadly no. So it's nice to hear from fellow Spurs fans talking. I wanted to let you people know that there is a diehard Spurs fan in India and a guy who loves listening to your podcast.
I love you.
I love you for listening to it. Thank you very much.
You said we can call him Joe. Joe, honestly, in the middle of India, wherever you are, thank you for listening. And
good on you, mate.
It isn't just Joe from India. We've had an email from South America about a geezer who makes an excuse to his wife to walk the dogs and smoke a spliff while listening to the Fighting Cop podcast.
I don't know if he said spliff, did he?
He did, yeah. We've also had emails from Australia and plenty from America, so we've gone global somehow.
Oh, remember last week we read one out from Jerusalem.
And one from Jerusalem in Israel.
From everywhere.
Is it Israel or is that a Muslim
state?
I don't know.
We're big time. We should probably
stay well away from that.
Joe, why don't you try, if you want to entice a few more people to Spurs in India, just tell them what used to be a cricket team. There you go.
Well, that's true. I was not being racist, guys. Everyone went quiet. Like I said something dodgy. Like, sorry, cricket's big. Yeah, it's a big deal in India. You tell them we used to be a cricket team, and
that's a good point. You're not a racist.
I was actually trying to make a decent point then, and I've just been looked at like
there was a little like awkward. Look.
Oh, is that what we're doing? Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, if I had my way,
Rick, what do you think about what you just said? I bet you agree with a racist, and
yeah,
Rick.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Right, see, Rick, yeah, I imagine as a somewhat Indian kind of guy that you should have been able to read his name out anyway.
Trust the American. Yeah, trust the American to be racist.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, look, you bombed a lot of brown people. Yeah. Just leave him alone now.
I just said Ricky should be able to read out a name from a country that his family comes from. No?
Just read your email, Dan. Yeah. Come on.
All right, I got an email here from Billy. Says, all right, lads, just finished listening to the 5th podcast, loving your collective work. I think, /hope, you have a long-running hit on your hands. The defining positive, I think, for your particular output is that you're all genuine fans, not some sweaty, overweight hacks.
Wow.
In brackets, I'm talking about Barry Glendening, you spiteful prick.
You are a prick, Barry.
Anyway, my question for the pod debate is regarding Levy and our transfer history. I know some of your views from the blogosphere, but what do you think of his custody of Spurs since Enoch's arrival? P.S. Chuffed, we got Shamrock Rovers in Europa League. If you're planning on popping over for the match, let me know. I'm sure the Dublin Yids will be able to find a few decent watering holes. Mate, I may see you over there.
Okay.
Anyway, what do we think? What do we think of Levy and Enoch since they've taken over?
I think personally, I think that Enoch, let's talk about Daniel Levy, because Enoch isn't a real kind of, that doesn't really mean anything to Tottenham fans.
Can we just to clarify, Joe Lewis owns Enoch.
Yep.
Daniel Levy manages Enoch.
He's a major player in the Enoch company, but his job is to manage Tottenham Hotspur, which is an investment of the company.
I've also heard that Daniel Levy is Joe Lewis's son. Which is fucking ridiculous.
I've always thought that Daniel Levy is not Joe Lewis's son.
No,
he is. He definitely has Christmas dinner there at Lewis's house.
Because you'll see that sometimes. You'll see some Spurs fans come out and say, "Oh, Joe Lewis is a billionaire. Why doesn't he just put some of that Abramovich money into Spurs?" And yeah. Well, because
he's sitting in the Bahamas on a beach, right?
Not only that, Enoch owns many clubs. Spurs is one of many.
Interestingly, speaking to Neil the Cabby, he was telling me that on Joe Lewis's yacht, he's got paintings worth 30, 40 million quid.
There's no way a London cabbie has been on Joe Lewis's.
No, he obviously hasn't. He's just read an article somewhere.
Oh, right.
The point being, if you can spend 30 million quid on a painting, but it goes back to the fact that in the real world, it's an investment. Levy answers to the shareholders. It's about making an investment, making a profit. I'm sure once we build this stadium, they would look to sell the club. I think that's the long term.
How do you think he's done? I mean, what's Levy done well?
Business-wise, you can't fault him. In terms of making us... The 14th richest club in Europe?
Without Champions League football.
Exactly. Amazing job.
Yeah.
In terms of the management side, he got it wrong with the director of football. It took a long time to get rid of that system.
Yeah.
We went back to basics. It's worked with Redknapp. Obviously, it's about stability now. But I guess that where people criticise him the most is the actual transfer aspect and whether there's a conflict with the manager at the time or not. Again, that's up for debate. I think he's done all right, but at the end of the day, it's a difficult one simply because you don't know what the agenda is.
Jack?
Obviously, we don't know in black and white the exact kind of figure as to what our wage boundary is, but it's widely speculated that we do have, imposed by Levy or Enoch or whoever it is, this very, very strict wage boundary. And I don't know, what do you guys think? Do you think is it... a good thing, or is it at the same time about it? I mean, should there be those times?
If we can't afford it, we can't afford it.
Do you think we can't afford it though, or do you think it is?
I mean, we're in a situation where we only have a certain amount of income during any year, and capacity stadiums still, even this day with Sky Sports and, you know, Premier League money coming in and stuff like that, we still have to kind of take into account how much money our stadium can create.
My point on Levy is that I've always liked Levy, but the one thing that drives me mad is this idea that we've made 30 million in the Champions League last year by getting through the group stages or whatever. This was 30 million guaranteed, whatever. Where have we put that 30 million? Where is it at? Where have we spent it?
There's an argument that Enoch, Levy are not investing money anymore. That we're not actually spending that much money on players. That we're buying bargains.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
I think we spent it down the new ticket office. They've got the blue caging outside the ticket office. I think that's where all the money has gone.
Bit distasteful, mate. Bit soon for that.
No. Get it in early.
That's what your mum said.
we hadn't had a mum joke yet, so
boom!
You got dumb lads.
So, Daniel Levy, I mean, I don't know what he's done with the £30 million that they made from Champions League football. I mean, Tottenham's an expensive club to run, and I can't imagine that money hasn't not gone on player wages and signing on fees and, you know, paying for Adebayor to sign for Spurs. But, you know, I mean, he's done an amazing job. Levy's done an amazing job with Spurs.
Can't disagree.
It's one of the only teams to come close to making a profit in the Premier League.
And one of the only teams apart from Man City, who've got unsold money, they're one of the only teams that have actually broken into the top four. I mean, Everton did it, but then fell away.
We did it naturally.
We buy a lot of players, but we make up that money. Yeah, we always had that policy of signing young players and selling them on for a profit. That's not going to work because still got genius at the club.
And I remember he took over when Sugar sold the club. Is that right? Is that right?
Sugar, basically brought in Enoch and feel that they were the best company to take us forward.
And Levy's done an amazing job. All right, he had the, you know, the problem with the director of
football. He's not a footballing man, or he wasn't a footballing man when it first started off. A lot of chairmen are not footballing men.
And he's pulled off some amazing transfer coups. Yeah,
he's got things Modric, wrong and he's learnt quickly.
Modric was one of the best signings any chairman has made in the Premier League since his formation.
I mean, the thing that I really respect about Levy is when we brought in... He was advised that Juan de Ramos was the guy to bring in. He was the cream of Europe at that time. Young manager, bring in training regime and everything to bring in. And then when it was kind of... when it wasn't going that great with Ramos, he knew when to cut it off.
All right, finally, I just wanted to come to something that Jeremy Roth sent in to us. And it was about the Tottenham Whisper stuff from last week. He sent it in too late and couldn't win the book, but he insisted that he should win the book anyway. But this is what he said, and it's pretty good to be fair. He says, probably too late for this, but I must reveal the secret of the Tottenham Whisper, lads. The Tottenham Whisper refers to the hushed tones of our away support must adopt while sat in the Emirates Stadium so as to not disturb the attendees of the library. Neighbourly politeness requires that we keep our chants, yea, our conversations to a ghostly hiss. The silence has been carried from Highbury along to the Woolwich corridor to the new mausoleum.
Mausoleum.
And must not be disturbed by yobs that know how to support their side, especially if the Gooners relinquish a 4-2 lead in the 88th minute.
Well, what's his name?
His name is Jeremy.
You don't win a book, mate, but a round of applause, he wins that.
He does, mate. To be fair, if that
well
came
done,
in...
Jez, well done, Jez.
It didn't put the same effort as the geezer who won the book last week, but I think, out of creativeness, if we did have a book to give away, you'd have it. Maybe Spooky would sort one of your porn books out.
Yeah, there's a couple of used ones under the bed. You can have one of them.
All right, so that's pretty much it for the Fighting Cock, episode 6.
Killer.
Fuck, let's quickly have a game of Killer. Spook, this is for you. Which former Prime Minister sits in the Paxton Road end of White Hart Lane? Which former Prime Minister of England sits in the Paxton Road end at White Hart Lane?
I should know this.
You got 5 seconds.
John Major?
No, he's a Chelsea fan.
Is he?
Yeah.
Wanker.
Dan, you've got no chance.
Are you
going
to fucking ask me?
No, I'm not going to ask you. You're not going to know.
Jesus.
Ricky, what? Ricky, do you know the answer?
I would probably say I haven't got a fucking clue.
Jack, have you got an answer?
I know that Ian Duncan Smith is he's never Prime Minister. He was only leader of the Tory party. That's not the answer, is it, girl?
Because if he is, if that is the answer, he used.
I'm pretty sure he was the Prime Minister.
No, he was
the MP. He was not.
In Cheatford.
All right.
I used to live in Cheatford, and I would have got that question right.
All right, forget about that question. Let me quickly do another question. Is he not moving? Yeah. I'm just reading them off the fucking card. This ain't a card. It's out of my book. Anyway, from which club? Sorry, let's start that shit again. From which club did Tottenham sign Jurgen Klinsmann from? Spooky. Five.
Inter?
No.
Shit.
Five. Fuck. Four.
Bone.
No. Ricky, five.
Well, this is shit.
Four. Three. Two.
FC. Cologne.
No.
Oh, this is embarrassing.
Monaco.
Oh my god, Jackie's got it! He's got it again! King Cock!
Did you read that off my card?
No, I knew it.
He did, I saw him do it.
It's easy.
Fucking Monaco. Superb. So, Jack is exempt from Prick of the Week. Ricky's back in it, so if you want to vote him in, feel free to do so. Although, to be fair, doesn't really deserve it this week.
No,
well, to be fair, I... If anyone's...
Did I get a vote?
You do.
Last week.
What have I done?
Spooky didn't
bring in the
vote.
White Sox.
No, Spooky got about three.
Bringing
in the White Sox.
It's a Spurs podcast.
I should get an award for that.
Okay, so basically we're going to wrap it up. There's nothing much left to say apart from...
There is actually. I would like to say something. It's actually Flav's birthday tomorrow, so everyone tweet him Happy birthday.
Birthday Beats.
Birthday Beats, if you ever see him in the building.
You'll be listening to this a few days after his birthday.
Yeah, but I celebrate my birthday for a month.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm 30 years old tomorrow. But
I wasn't going to mention that, but happy birthday, mate. Yeah.
Shall we give him birthday beats now?
Birthday buns! Birthday buns!
Ow! That actually hurt.
Yeah,
no. No one else joined in. It was just you, Al.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
Very violent man.
Al just got up and punched Flav.
Okay. Let's. yeah, so you can email us at thefightingcock@gmail.com. You can go to us at Facebook.com/
DearMrLevy.com
The Fighting Cock. It jumped in before I had The Fighting Cock.
Did you?
Before I said the Facebook. Yeah, so Facebook.com/ The Fighting Cock. Dear Mr. Levy.
iTunes.
iTunes, you can go.
SoundCloud.
If you can't find us on iTunes, by the way, you
have
to.
We said SoundCloud.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just now.
MySpace.
We're not on MySpace, but.
Pebo.
Pebo, yeah. Pedo.
I didn't say that.
I don't know. Yeah, no, so if you can't find us on iTunes, by the way, because some people have had a bit of trouble, you just go onto the iTunes store on the left-hand menu, type in The Fighting Cock, and you'll be able to find every podcast that we've ever released.
Just type in Tottenham, and you'll find... Yeah, actually, don't do that, because you'll end up with some other Tottenham podcasts.
Well, you might end up with a Spurs show, God
you
forbid.
Don't want that.
You don't want that. It's the start of the beef for the Spurs show, is this it?
No. According to that, Phil Cornwell.
We have. And there's not much to talk about next Saturday, because it's England game, isn't it?
Right, where's that?
I don't know. I'm not talking about that. It's Spurs game.
No,
let's
not talk about England.
No, I'm not talking about it. I'm just saying,
I'm
is
just
there
saying
a Spurs game
on
the weekend?
Sure.
There's nothing, mate.
All right. So you look forward
to. So the boredom starts.
Yeah, the boredom starts now. I fucking hate internationals. All right, lads. That'll be it. Thank you.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Clock. It's the fighting.